Hello, Brooklyn, how you do? Where you going? We cannot come to. If I came, I would be your man. You could be my lady and have my baby and drive my car. You got me crazy. So crazy. I'm never going to be your
man.
Hello, Brooklyn.
I'm so taken. This is the Russell and Bro podcast. Russell here and Bro there. I am Brett, the man bun Garofalo, and he is Carl, the talent Jackson, aka the man behind the Russell and Fro Twitter account. And let me just say, we're pumped about tonight's show. This is one of, if not the best time of the year for NBA fans. What I mean by that is the NBA draft is coming up this Thursday, followed quickly behind by NBA free agency just about a week afterwards. Stars will demand out, dreams will be crushed, and hope will reign eternal, as each and every name is called on Thursday night. It was a very nice setup, I think. There are a lot of moving parts to unpack, but fear not. We've spent a lot of time combing through just about every NBA draft podcast you can imagine, every guide, every mock draft out there, you name it. We've got a fun agenda for the evening, and we'll get into that first in a second. But I think before we do, let's get a little bit vulnerable and check in with our emotional sides here. Carl, how are you doing?
Brett, I'm so pumped. I've been prepping for this show at least all day. I've listened through at least 17 hours of podcasts on 3x speed. I'm getting residual farts from just hearing so many Athletic Greens ad reads that they've ripped through my Bird Dogs, which I also don't own. But I'm intrigued by the cloud fabric, and I don't know why Mark Cuban is involved. I'm ready to go. I've heard the names of several prospects, read about them. And let's just dive in this baby. But I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the other news involving the Nets and draft picks in the future. Bradley Beal going to team up with our guy Kevin Durant in Phoenix. What could go wrong? An offense only trio pulled together on a ludicrous timeline with an owner that's willing to spend into the tax. What could go wrong, Brett?
Well, not to mention we're throwing Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, and Isaiah Thomas, dude, that is boss shit from Chris Paul. Like, I know Chris Paul's like obnoxious and annoying. And I love Chris Paul, and I love him going to noted Nets fan, Nets Twitter outer circle member. He's no, like, you know, Bill Jellyberry, but he's involved. So Pond Deb, going right to him and just giving that answer twice. Being like, yeah, I guess, Matt and Isaiah did not want me here. Fascinating stuff, to say the least. But what do you think about the Beal deal?
Hey, listen, that's I can understand somebody being petty when he finds out he's been traded by a team that he went to the finals with from his son via text. That's a tough look.
That's bullshit. But yeah, I don't know. I love the idea of Isaiah Thomas as just like the fucking Iago in this scenario.
It's great. Well, anyway, back to the Beal trade. Now, for any Nets fans that missed it, Woj was on ESPN a little bit earlier tonight and was talking about the Nets' future plans. And one of the things that he mentioned was how valuable the Nets' draft picks from the Suns in those later years, 27, 28, may now look because of the upcoming Suns cap situation as created by this Bradley Beal deal, which I certainly think is a very intriguing idea, but I think there's a lot of other implications here that could swing things in the Nets' favor if, in fact, we do go star hunting. The biggest of those being, if I'm a Western Conference team and I'm looking around and I see the Lakers, I see the Nuggets, I now see the Suns, and I'm a fringe contender or one of those lower tier play-in teams or borderline player teams that thought we might have been a leader of our players or a star player getting disgruntled and becoming available away from being a contender, maybe I'm thinking twice about that. And maybe I'm thinking about selling and bottoming out while those potentially short-term, some of those stars burn really bright and burn out fastest teams, run their course, go young, and hopefully be on the upswing when those cap situations are exploding, those players are a little bit older, either getting traded or getting injured, which could play in the Nets' favor if our true plan is to build a roster that's very flexible and go star hunting. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, last time we talked about sort of three paths the Nets could go down, whether that's going all in for a star, presumably Damian Lillard, whether that's trying to trade to the third pick to take Scoot Henderson and sort of do an accelerated rebuild that way, or sort of keeping the powder dry in the middle. And I think, you know, with the events that have transpired in the past few days, you know, I think that, I mean, my basic take is, like, number one, this is independent of the Beal stuff. Like, I don't really feel like the Scoot trade is realistically on the table for the Nets. I just don't. Everything that we've heard kind of coming out of Portland is basically just like, it's just a question of who's going to ask for the trade. Like, I think at the very least, it's fair to say that Portland, you know, they don't want to trade Damian Lillard, but I think they are operating in a way where they don't care if their actions, like, mean that they have to trade him. Like, I think what they're looking for that pick is just not something that the Nets have at this point. And I think that's fine. So scratch that one off the table. There's also the news with, you know, potentially Zion Williamson being on the board in Charlotte. And so I, you know, kind of that one's much less likely than I thought it was. What the Beal trade really impacts to me is a trading for Damian Lillard. And I honestly feel almost like the Nets, the picks that the Nets have from the Suns, and to a lesser extent, the Mavericks in 2029, those are too valuable, frankly, to me at this point to spend on Damian Lillard. Like, I think we talked about, I mean, first of all, I love Damian Lillard. I would love to root for him. I would love for him to come to Brooklyn at the right price. Like, that would be a fun team to root for and get behind. But I just feel like going all in, so to speak, with those picks on something like that, to me, just doesn't feel like it makes sense right now, just given the value that they have. And like you said, that could mean holding them and making those picks, and it could also mean just waiting for the next star to become available in a bigger name. To me, I think this clarifies the Nets' priorities in the sense that I think the two most important things for them next season are, number one, developing and building Mikal Bridges up into whatever he is going to become. And I think getting him to meaningfully level up offensively from somebody that is, you know, maybe the third option on a championship team to somebody who could potentially be the second, I think is a meaningful, meaningful thing that the Nets can do. And I think there's almost no downside to trying to do that either, because, you know, he has the reputation that he does, and he's proven, you know, what he can do as kind of a catch and shoot guy. Even if you just add a little bit of playmaking juice, if he doesn't quite get to that second option level, but is still like a third plus, like, I think that's valuable. And then the second thing is, I think, rehabbing what you can of Ben Simmons' value. And so putting him in a position to come back in and succeed on the court and play and show that he has some value. You're already going to recruit some value just by virtue of the fact that he's going to be an expiring salary after this season is over. So that's something. But if you can just plant the seed that there's maybe some on-court value there, enough for somebody to take a big swing, like, that to me is big as well. I mean, and obviously, you know, in a best case scenario world, like, he comes back and plays to a level that he was in Philadelphia, and you have, you know, a superstar in all NBA and an all defensive caliber guy on your team. And, you know, failing that somewhere below, like, even if he just sustains the level that we saw from him in like December of last year for an entire season or for enough of a season that you feel like it could happen for an entire season, you know, maybe he plays his way into being just a neutral value, you know, trade asset, which at his number is a big deal. So to me, like, it's that kind of developmental situation that the Nets are coming into next year. That's what I would prioritize. That's what I would look at. And so when we talk about the draft, you know, I'm thinking of it through that lens. Like, who are guys that not necessarily drafting for fit, but knowing that that's what you're trying to do. That's what your kind of goal is. Like, who kind of fits into that mold, and sort of what different options are available there.
God, if Ben Simmons comes back and can run point, play defense, I could see us being a sixth seed again, legitimately, in the Eastern Conference next year, which would be absolutely wild. Just somebody to move Spencer Dinwiddie off ball. That would be, I mean, that's best case scenario for me. Him playing well enough to move Spencer Dinwiddie off ball changes everything for this team, because the ball keeps moving and Spencer Dinwiddie turns more into a spot up shooter and can play like he did with Luka in Dallas. Well, one of the other things I was thinking about, and I realized that Bradley Beal has a no trade clause before I say this, but think about the haul that Washington got back for him. It was a bevy of second rounders, maybe a couple swaps. We haven't seen the final construct of the deal here, and really no legitimate player of value in that trade. I'm wondering if, based on the albatross contract that he has, that might potentially drive down the price of somebody like Damian Lillard, who's going to be paid a lot more at a much older age than Bradley Beal. Like, is there a world where the Nets can get Damian Lillard without giving up those later Suns picks? And maybe there's not, but it did make me think about that when I saw that.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And that's why I say, like, you know, I would be definitely into it at the right price, depending on what that was. I just feel like the other option that the Blazers have that the Suns maybe didn't have in that scenario, or the Wizards I guess the Wizards would be the right team, is Portland, I think, stands to benefit in some way from just keeping him. And he may stand to benefit as well in that regard too. So, like, you know, I don't know, you know, it depends kind of what's out there. And it depends sort of like how much of a discussion that is at this point, as opposed to something that's like already been submitted. And you know, the other valuable thing that the Nets have, I think, in that scenario too, is like, if you were to send, you know, Joe Harris is $19 million expiring, Dinwiddie's $20 million expiring. I mean, that gets you pretty close to Dame's number, with all of the money coming off the books next year, which might be more appealing than like taking on a Tyler Hero or a Duncan Robinson, contract. So, you know, I don't think I would kill that. I just don't know that I'm as jazzed about it as I am about, you know, going into more of a rebuild mode where I'm making those picks in 2029. The other thing is, maybe it does put on the table is your two-star scenario where you get Dame and then you add Pascal Siakam or somebody like that. But I think for today, the way that we're thinking of it, it's probably much more out of that middle scenario. It's probably much more out of that, like, kind of cross the Dame deal off the table for right now. Cross a bigger deal off the table. Let's assume, and frankly, like, let's assume that the Nets are making the two picks that they have right now at 21 and 22. We can also talk about some trade up potential and stuff like that after we go through these guys. But I think just to kind of keep it simple and keep it straightforward, let's start with the guys that we see available there and kind of go from there.
I love it. So let's talk about the two picks that the Nets have right now. They have three total picks this year. Two of those are first rounders, 21 from the Suns, and then 22 being the last of our own picks. And then we've got the 51st pick as well. We're not going to talk about that because that is such a crapshoot pick right now. And I think it'll be fun to see what the Nets take there, but the likelihood of us stumbling into a Nikola Jokic or an Isaiah Thomas, the other Isaiah Thomas, is very unlikely. So if the Nets were to keep both of those picks and decide to stand pat and build for the future, who might be available at those picks? Carl and I will go through who we would pick, then who we think the Nets are going to pick. And then I think at the end, we're going to talk a bit about what these different levels of players might mean or indicate about the Nets' future plans if the Nets actually do grab them. So I went through a lot of different media outlets, and Carl did too. And we took a look at picks 20 through 24 from Sam Vecenie's big board, Sam Vecenie and Adam Spinella's mock draft, The Ringer's mock draft, John Hollinger's big board, ESPN's big board, a Field of 68 mock draft. I even looked at Fansided because they had Andre Jackson listed at number 20 on their big board, so you got to respect them. Very, very excited about that. And listed off all those players and then put a number next to them as to how many times they were referenced in conjunction with the Nets, which I thought was super interesting. So that list of players and them right now is Bryce Sensabaugh, Leonard Miller, Chris Murray, Jet Howard, Derek Whitehead, Noah Clowney, Jaime Jaquez, Jordan Hawkins, Nick Smith Jr. And then we've got a couple other floaters in there. Leonard Miller, James Nagy, Colby Jones, Brandon Podzimski, I hope I pronounced that right, Rayon Rupert, who I believe is that's how you pronounce it. So those are all the guys that were, I guess, theoried to be available, and not only available, but potential fits for the Nets. So I think, you know, the interesting thing, and this is the last quick little metric that I'll run through, Bryce Sensabaugh was the guy that was mentioned the most or picked the most in that range. He was picked 4 times out of all those things that I looked at. And then the guys that were mentioned 3 times were Derek Whitehead, Noah Clowney, and Nick Smith Jr. So that's overwhelmingly in the wing forward category outside of Nick Smith. But then if you look down to the guys that were mentioned least, there's a lot of wings in there. So that's what we're looking at. And I think we can go through and give a quick profile on each of those guys if you want to, or do you want to just get into who we would pick?
Let's just get into who we would pick, and I feel like we'll kind of naturally go through from there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Do you want to go first, or you want me to jump into it?
I'll go first. I mean, the guy that's kind of caught my attention, and again, like, I'm probably over-indexing a little bit too much on immediate need, particularly with somebody that's as much of a prospect, but the guy that's kind of caught my attention the most of these is Leonard Miller. Somebody that, I listen to a lot of Sam Vecenie's podcast. I know he's a little bit higher on him than consensus. But Leonard Miller is a dude that's played for G League Ignite. He's 6'11", 7 foot wingspan, but plays more like a wing. They had his high school coach on a good prospect preview on the Field of 68. And he was talking about how he's Lamar Odom light. Which I thought is kind of a fun descriptor. His shooting is not quite there yet, but definitely something that could come along. And then he's somebody who profiles, you know, as a really strong rebounder, I think, in the year. And so I think, you know, if you look at sort of interesting front court combinations, like, he's a guy that you could probably line up as something like a power, like, you know, I think him and Claxton as like a sort of power forward center duo. We are like maybe one guy's playing more in the middle, but you're just adding some size and bulk into that front line in a couple of different ways, I think could make a lot of sense. So he's somebody that I was pretty excited about, and, you know, would probably be where I would go with this pick, because I think he's somebody that would allow the Nets to add size, but not add it through a traditional center necessarily, but somebody that bolsters sort of like the front court overall. Somebody that could work with Claxton, that could work with Simmons because of his ability to stretch the floor somewhat, but obviously could kind of come into his own, overall. I like the fact that he's played with Ignite, been playing against sort of a higher level of competition than some of the college dudes. So I think that would be my first pick. And then if we're making two, I'll go ahead, mostly just because I want to talk about him. To take him off the board is obviously Jordan Hawkins. So I've seen him mock kind of all over the place. I tend to think he will be off the board before the Nets pick, just because this is based a little bit on experience, very anecdotal, but like I kind of feel like if draft Twitter is like a little bit lower on a college guy, particularly somebody that's coming off a national championship run, like, they'll tend to get snatched up earlier, just because of the winning pedigree and because of the exposure that comes from that. But I think, you know, he's one of the top shooters in the draft, you know, first or second best, I think, overall, for sure. Off movement guy, great cutter. You know, I think, you know, Rip Hamilton to me is like the obvious comp for him. Somebody that, you know, both in terms of positives and negatives, right? Somebody that can, you know, do all of sort of what Joe Harris does for the Nets right now in terms of running off ball, having that kind of off ball gravity, somebody that you have to account for, at all times. I think the difference between him and like a Joe Harris is like his release, just from watching him as much as I did this season, his release is insanely quick to me. He really does not need a lot of space to get that shot off. He can, you know, do more athletically with that. I think he can do a little bit more with the ball in his hands in terms of attacking closeout. I think there's some playmaking stuff that's going to need to be sort of learned at the next level, but I think will come with it. I don't necessarily think he'll be somebody that's like a second option kind of creator, but I think he's somebody that will grow into being able to put the ball on the deck, make the right read, keep the ball moving. He's naturally kind of willing to move. And then I think, you know, the knock on him is really on the defensive side. I remember Vecini saying he was like one of the, it's him and somebody else that were tied as like the two lightest guys in his top whatever 40 excuse me rankings. So like I think, you know, there's going to be some limitations that come with that in terms of you know, how well he can defend and how well he can hold up in the NBA game. I think he's somebody that, you know, walks into the league next year as a, as like a, you know, Marcus Thornton type, you know, microwave 6'7" man, with obviously the ability to play, you know, beyond that as he kind of gets bigger and into shape. And I think, you know, defensively, like, you don't play for Dan Hurley if you don't defend. So it's not like he's not a willing defender. It's not like he's not a smart defender. I just think it's just a physicality kind of concern. So I think in the right system, you'll be able to master those deficiencies and make it work. And I think the Nets are actually a perfect kind of place for him to be able to do that with the number of high caliber defenders that the team has.
I would be ecstatic if the Nets took both of those guys, but even more so if either one of them was available by the time the Nets picks rolled around. It's so tough for me to see somebody like Jordan Hawkins getting past the Lakers, who need more shooting, need more playmaking, and at least need somebody that tries on defense. I've seen Jordan Hawkins compared to Malik Beasley, except with the exception that he actually wants to compete on the defensive end, which I think is perfect for the Lakers right now. And then also there's a lot of rebuilding teams who have longer timelines and the patience to let somebody like a Leonard Miller develop as well. So it's also tough for me to see him dropping. And I was really excited to see in some mock drafts that that folks thought they would be available for the Nets. Cause when I was just looking at the prospect list, I thought for sure that both were going to be gone. And, you know, one of the reasons why I'm willing to bet on Miller is more of an upside pick is because he has one skill that's going to translate right away, which is rebounding. By all accounts, he's a great rebounder. So I think he'll be able to play and stick versus somebody like the G League right away, which is why I like him upside wise more than somebody like a Noah Clowney or a Bryce Sensabaugh, who they do some things well, but not well enough to potentially keep them on the floor, at least in a winning situation. And that's how I feel about Jordan Hawkins too. Worst case, you're going to be able to play him because of that shooting. You just might not be able to have him in your closing lineup until he builds out his frame and he's able to defend at a high level. And again, it's not because of lack of trying. It's just because he'll get pushed around out there and probably blown by until he's strong enough to do that. So I took a similar approach to who I wanted the Nets to pick. And I'm glad we differed on at least one of these picks. I was worried that we were going to pick the same guys. I really liked what Vecini said on one of his podcasts about how at this stage in the draft, outside of the lottery, and even the back end of the lottery, he likes to think about things in terms of game theory for tournament poker, where it's not necessarily about doing as well in each tournament as you can and maybe finishing 30th or 29th or whatever it might be. It's about making riskier plays, because if you win one tournament or come in top five in one tournament out of every 15 or 20, you'll make more by the end of the year in doing that. And that's how he thinks about NBA prospects in this range. If you take those higher upside swings, if you nail one of them or two of them, I mean, there you go, right? Yeah. You're potentially in contention for a championship versus having championship infrastructure if in fact a star decides to sign with you, which of course is more likely for the Nets because we're in a big market, but right, we're still getting used to it as Nets fans.
Yeah, I think informed bets is his phrase du jour on that, right? Like
informed, exactly. So I personally think that Leonard Miller is one of those. I think he's one of those guys that has star upside potential if you bet on him. So he's a guy that I had on my list of what I was hoping the Nets would do with these picks. The other guy that I had on there was Derek Whitehead, where he's a bigger guy that showed that he could shoot last year in what was a down season for him coming off of a foot surgery, which led to a corrective foot surgery on top of that. And of course, I think everybody would maybe shy away there, but I did find out from listening to one of those podcasts that the person that did that foot surgery was Brooklyn Nets fan favorite Martin O'Malley, team surgeon. So if the Nets do end up picking Derek Whitehead, who can theoretically shoot, is a bigger guy, I think the type of prospect that the Nets like, who was also the fifth ranked prospect out of high school, you have to think that they have a leg up medically and believe that he's going to get back to form. So the two guys that I would go with are Leonard Miller or Dariq Whitehead, assuming this group of guys is available, because I think they have the highest upside out of this group of players in terms of star potential or high upside starter potential.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And Whitehead, I think, is like definitely somebody I've seen mocked the Nets a bunch, and somebody that I would think is right out of the Sean Marks playbook in terms of a guy that, you know, higher pedigree coming in to the season, lowered expectations due to an injury that they may have an inside track on knowing is going to be, you know, or his recovery from is going to be better. I think it's very similar to the Caris LeVert situation with him coming in. So, you know, same surgeon as well. So I would be, you know, I would not be the least bit surprised to see him in there. In terms of other guys on this list, I mean, a couple names that I would be a little more wary of if I were Brooklyn, you know, Bryce Sensabaugh, like it's, you know, it sounds like he's you know, primarily a bucket getter, you know, with a great sort of pro ready like body, but not necessarily doesn't translate like defensively yet. So I'm not necessarily like a lot of concerns around his like motor and his sort of buy-in. He hit, you know, this weird thing where he like shut himself down in the middle of the Big Ten tournament to just basically go prep for the draft. Like he's somebody that I think will be able to score. But you know, I would just worry like with that, especially with that archetype, like if all you can do is score and you have nothing to fall back on, otherwise, like, yes, that is the hardest thing to do to be able to create for yourself. But I just feel like there's not a lot of ways, there's not a lot of floor there. And particularly like with what, you know, we see with the Nets going through with Cam Thomas, like it's a skill set where, you know, you can play and you can be featured and you can score 45 points a game and that's incredible. But like, if you're not being featured in that way, it's like hard to keep you on the floor. So that would be a red flag and a worry for me. Another guy that I was like excited about, but haven't necessarily, I don't know. I have some doubts is Noah Clowney. He's somebody that, center from Alabama, you know, great mobility, ability to switch. Sounds very Claxton-esque in that way. Plus a little bit more willing to shoot jump shots. I don't know that would translate better than what the Nets have seen with Claxton. And I don't really know, like Claxton to me is so unique. Like I don't necessarily know that it makes sense to try to replace what they have in him. You know, I think it'll be interesting to see the way that the front court just positions evolve over the next few years with like more skilled guys coming in, more shooting coming into those positions. And, you know, maybe there's more room for these guys that are essentially like center sized wing players. But I don't know. I worry a little bit about like there just being so much stuff that needs to coalesce there. And then even if it does, you end up with essentially like a center who like Nick Claxton who could shoot. And Claxton, I think, is like a really high percentile outcome for him anyway. But like, it's still ultimately a center at the end of the day in a league that like maybe doesn't value them as much, assuming that they're not Nikola Jokic or Joel Embiid or you know that type of difference maker there. I just sort of struggle to see like the everything goes right scenario meriting like the amount of risk with him.
I really did think about both of those players for my picks because they gain of calculated risks or informed bets, like we were just talking about, where they're high upside, very low floor guys. And the reason I didn't go with Sensabaugh is two things. One, he's had multiple meniscus tears and that's something that doesn't necessarily grow back. So I think that would be of concern. And two, even though he's by all accounts an incredible scorer with a mid-range game, and we all know mid-range is so important once you get to those higher level games in the playoffs, the two names that came to mind for me were, like you said, Cam Thomas. So I'm very glad that you mentioned that, but also Dejounte Murray as well, where he wasn't necessarily known as defender coming in. He went to the and he always gives credit to Kawhi Leonard for the contract he was able to earn, who said, hey, don't worry about offense. Try to make an all defensive team. That's what's going to keep you in this league. And lo and behold, he didn't get a max contract. We got a $20 million contract, and now he's a starter on the Atlanta Hawks and was traded for multiple first-round picks. So I think infrastructure and the type of veterans that Bryce Sensabaugh is surrounded with could really – there's a massive range of outcomes, and that's the thing that I think is going to get him that higher level if he really buys into playing defense. And I would be interested to see him surrounded by Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson – and even assistant coach, newly signed assistant coach Corey Vincent, who is apparently the guy that helped Mikal Bridges build his game and is highly regarded from the Phoenix Suns. There's you could see the Nets having the infrastructure to get the best out of him. I just think there are other players that, if available here, you wouldn't have to deal with those character concerns and it wouldn't be as much of a risk. And same thing with Noah Clowney. I didn't see any character concerns with him. I wasn't even sure about the shot because I think what I listened to on the Field of 68 breakdown for him was Alabama's offense was to space out and shoot threes. So it was more he was a willing three-point shooter rather than being a good three-point shooter. And you know, that sometimes that makes a difference, right? Especially as a center, you at least keep folks honest out there. And the only real thing that popped to them was his mobility, which I think is great, right? Because if you can do anything else and you're mobile as a center, you can be a plus defender, but it sounds like he's so far away from having a plus in any other skills. He wouldn't be somebody the Nets could even play in the league for potentially 3 to 4 years. And if we truly are trying to build an infrastructure that we can surround a star with, I just don't know if he's the right pick for us right now. So I did heavily consider those guys as well, but they fell second to Millard and Whitehead for me.
Yeah. Another guy that's not on our list, and but I would sort of consider at this stage is Omax Prosper, so Olivier Maxence Prosper from Marquette.
Absolutely.
In terms of informed bets, like I think his upside is a little bit lower. Like I think he's somebody that just slots in like pretty cleanly as like a very specific type of player, but for a team that I think will stand to benefit moving one or both of Royce O'Neal and Dorian Finney-Smith this year for sort of future draft capital. I think sort of having an heir apparent waiting in the wings as somebody that can kind of come up and grow as like another versatile defender who can shoot the three, who can maybe start from sort of where Mikal Bridges was when he was on Phoenix as Mikal sort of ascends into a slightly bigger role. Could make a lot of sense. And I think, again, like we've talked about, like there's more ways to do this. And I don't think the Nets are going to be the type of team that's going to have the big swing at like lottery pick type talent until 2029. And so putting together sort of this infrastructure where you can plug in either sort of reclamation project, create our scorers or entice, free agents to come that way. Like that to me is the way that this thing works.
AKA the Sean Marks 5-year plan, right? He's got a 5-year plan, Carl.
Exactly. And like, I think there's like multiple different ways you can do it. And it with wide variance in terms of like how good of a team you are in any given year. But at least like if you're showing like, hey, I mean, we know that Mikal Bridges can be the third best player on a team that goes to the finals, yeah. Right? We know that Cam Johnson could be the fourth best player on a team that goes to the finals, maybe the fifth. So we know that those are quality contributors to really good teams. I think we strongly believe that Nick Claxton can be, assuming he sticks around. We know that Dorian Finney-Smith can be a playoff rotation contributor. Like, so, mm-hmm. You have these guys, obviously you're going to sell some of them off for pieces. As you move along here, but like I think being able to like have a Royce O'Neal there for a year with like somebody like Omax behind him, create that role, carve that role out, be somebody for him to learn from, and then have him kind of take over as things move. Like to me, like that's a win-win, and that's a good way I think to grow this organically, kind of from where they are.
Yeah, I agree with you. One of the things I like most about the position that we're in right now is there's a proven track record of Marks and the Nets doing this before. finding talent outside of the lottery and finding out undervalued assets and building a team that maybe can't be a contender, but a team that can compete and potentially attract stars to it. So I think it's right where we want to be, even though it might not seem like that to the rest of the league, or maybe not right where we want to be, but right in a place where we're comfortable going from this to something much better in the future, even if it's murky and we can't necessarily see that outside of a Dame trade. So do you want to transition to who we think the Nets will pick? Or do you have anything else?
Let me just toss one other name out there. Mostly the Adam Spinella special, but Sidy Cissoko is another G League guy, Ignite guy, that, you know, I think from listening to those guys talk about him, I think there's a real reason to kind of buy into and believe his upside. I think, you know, a lot of it resides on how well he's going to be able to shoot, but he's definitely somebody they can defend. He's definitely somebody that's like a high character, you know, buy-in individual, great on-ball defender, length, you know, to be able to switch, 6'10 wingspan, 6'6, you know, player. He's able to cut and pass pretty well. So, like, I think somebody that can kind of plug in and do sort of all the in-between sort of connector stuff if he can't shoot. And then you're just making a bet on the shot sort of coming along. And I don't remember the stats off the top of my head, but, you know, I know Spinella is kind of citing, like, a few things as the sort of year went along, and a section of the season where, like, when Scoot was still playing, kind of looking at his stats from that portion of the year and showing his shooting being a lot better when he's getting set up by a capable creator, as opposed to, you know, later in the season when Scoot had kind of shut down, they didn't have anything to play for, and he's just not taking the same type of shots. So he's definitely a name that I think has been mentioned. So I wanted to throw that out there as well. And just to round out, just like all the French guys, Rupert, I feel like was a very popular mock to the Nets sort of earlier in the draft cycle. I think he's sort of fallen out of the first round at this point, but primarily because he is a French national who played professionally in New Zealand, and we know the Nets front office has some New Zealand ties because Sean Max present, Jermaine present. So, you know, by all accounts, he's kind of a defense first cutter slasher. Maybe he'll evolve enough offensively to play. So I don't know that he's necessarily a great fit, but, kind of a fun dude to hang around and, you know, maybe somebody that could be available, more in the middle, of the second round, or if he's still available at 51, I think, would definitely be worth a flyer on.
Oh, that would be awesome. Yeah, I view Sidy Cissoko as the anti-Cam Thomas, where if you have him on the team, maybe they cancel each other out and there's an explosion and they're gone. Or he's a high-character guy that can't really play offense, and that's really what the Nets need right now. You know, you can potentially support a guy like a Cam Thomas when you have veterans that he has to be secondary to, but I'm looking for the Nets to hopefully move him and keep building the culture this offseason.
Sure. Okay, so I'm happy to dive into what we think they're going to do.
Yeah, let's
but
do
I,
it.
But I do have one question I want to throw at you. Are we still operating under the assumption for this exercise that they are making the 21st, 22nd picks, or can we open it up to potential trade-ups and things like that?
How about we start with them making the picks, and then we can talk about what it might look like. Do you want to talk about what you actually think is going to happen, or what you would like to happen in those scenarios?
I think what I think is going to happen, because I think I've said what I would like to happen.
Okay, perfect. All right, so I guess I'll start by going through who I think the Nets are going to take. And again, this doesn't reflect my personal views, but knowing the Nets' history, knowing what their potential plans for the future might be, this is the direction that I think they're going to go in. I do think that they're going to mirror one of my desired picks and take Derek Whitehead, if only because of the Martin O'Malley connection and the fact that he can shoot and is a bigger body, which is Mac. What the infrastructure the Nets are trying to build now, and Sean Marks' draft history of what you were talking about earlier, taking guys that might be undervalued due to injury history, and that injury history potentially affecting a college basketball season or performance that may have had them ranked higher. Now, secondarily, and this is where the Nets zag from my zig, I think they're also going to take Jaime Jaquez. That guy is old as hell, 22, maybe one of the oldest players, or maybe the oldest player in the draft, if not one of the oldest. But by all accounts, he is an awesome culture guy. He plays super hard on both ends of the floor. And if I'm thinking about a potential future star trade for the Nets, he seems like a guy that can come in and contribute immediately. So if we end up having to give up a lot of depth to bring in a star, he can still support that infrastructure and hopefully play in high leverage games. But if we don't make a star trade, he's an awesome culture guy, and you can only see him elevating the atmosphere around a lot of young players and bringing a lot to the locker room in a season where the Nets really need that and are trying to purge some of the toxicity of the past few years. So if I were the Nets, or if I were thinking like the Nets, those are the two players that I would target if they're available.
I think that makes sense. I mean, I agree with you. I think Whitehead is pretty likely. I just think that connection, it just seems too in Sean Mark's wheelhouse to pass up the possibility of getting sort of a lot of talent that late. And then I would say if he is available, like I really think Leonard Miller would make a lot of sense, just as somebody that, you know, is a good rebounder, would come in and give that impact, but is also kind of a Sean Marks kind of player, as sort of a tweener guy that can kind of guard multiple positions, and is athletic. You know, I know that there's parts of his game that still need to be developed, but seems like the kind of development prospect that this team would be looking for. So if they are making both of those picks, that's kind of what I think that they would do. What I suspect is that they will not make both of them. I think that, or at least they won't make both of them at 21 and 22. I think we will see a trade where one or both of those picks is packaged along with either Dorian Finney-Smith or Royce O'Neal to fetch a higher pick. I think more likely than not a higher pick. Well, I mean that's been my sort of thought. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that we'll certainly try. I have two concerns when it comes to that. One, I was trying to think back on a lot of the trade up situations that have happened in the past. And I think there's some pretty public examples of those not going so well. The ones that happened at the back end of the draft, you don't tend to remember. So I don't think I'm qualified enough to say that they usually don't work out. But my perception is whenever you're trading up and whenever you're trading multiple assets or multiple picks for one pick, it almost always works out in favor of the team trading down because that team has all the leverage in that trade. Now, is the thought of getting into the lottery and getting a lottery pick super exciting? And do I want that for short-term dopamine hits? Absolutely. I think that would be awesome. I think this is a deep draft. I think there's a lot of upside swings. But that being said, I'm just not sure if the juice is worth the squeeze there. Again, unless we're super sure about somebody. But even if we are, the draft is such a crapshoot. I don't know how you can be super sure about anybody but potentially Chris Murray, who his floor is probably higher than anybody. But he's really Keegan Murray at home, where he's going to be a sixth or seventh guy that doesn't really take much off the table.
Yeah, I mean, in my view, I think it only makes sense if you can do one of those picks and a player to move up. I think you had texted me earlier when we were talking about this, like just not being a fan of trading like multiple picks or more picks for fewer picks. So I wouldn't necessarily do both of the picks to move up necessarily. Like I don't think that makes a ton of sense. But if there's a world in which you can send, Royce and 21 to, Atlanta to move up to 15, maybe you take back like John Collins, who I know they're trying to get rid of. Like, I feel like there's other ways to do. I mean, like just playing around with it, like, Royce and Joe Harris to Atlanta for John Collins, and then you flip the 15 and 21st pick potentially. Like, I don't know that that's enough juice to let Atlanta move off of it. But from their perspective, it doesn't seem like they really like Collins very much. The Nets, for whatever reason, are always mocked to him. So I feel like they do. He could be a decent change of scenery guy. It's a long contract to take on. The value to Atlanta is also like you're getting Royce O'Neal, who I think makes sense for your team. You're getting Joe Harris, who I think is potentially useful in a buy low. Both of those guys are expiring salary. So it could make sense. like if there are ways to do it otherwise. I also think, you know, the other option is like what you and I had talked about of like, do you pick up an extra second round pick by moving somebody like Dorian Finney-Smith for a player that you want, like Tyus Jones from Memphis, where, you know, maybe it's not, maybe you're not getting a first back for him per se, but you're getting a guy that slots right in as a, you know, backup point guard position that you need, or potentially even a starting point guard, depending on what, you know, where you want to play Dinwiddie and how you want to do that, for a guy in Dorian Finney-Smith, who's somewhat redundant on your team, and you still have the opportunity to make both picks and then maybe get an extra, a second rounder in there as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I'm looking at this list and trying to figure out who may not want to make. Dallas is an obvious one, but I think it would take a lot for us to move up to number 10. I think they've got their hopes set on higher leverage players than a Dorian Finney-Smith or a Royce O'Neal. Orlando's got Go ahead, sorry.
Just on the Dallas front, like, I mean, two things. One, I don't think the Nets can trade him back to Dallas, at least for there's some period in which they can. But what we had talked about, and I'm trying to pull it up, was that like crazy three-team deal, I think like Brooklyn Nets 85 put together on Twitter, which basically was a three-teamer between the Suns, the Mavs, and the Nets, where Ayton was going to Dallas, Royce and maybe somebody else were going to Phoenix. I was like Royce, Reggie Bullock, Tim Hardaway, going to Phoenix. So it's, you know, like, you know, turning one guy into four guys that are contributors, a big win for Phoenix. Even though the Nets help both of those teams that have their draft picks, like I feel like, I mean, from a Phoenix standpoint, like, I don't think there's any downside for the Nets if the Suns can win the next two championships, frankly, and then blow it up. Yeah. Like, that's fine.
Agreed.
You know, like, it's really about the 27 and the 29 picks and the 28 swap. And then from Dallas, I mean, I don't think Kyrie needs help destroying an organization, but sending him another malcontent guy that is going to be overpaid at, like, you know, the least valuable position in the league is a great way to do it. So, you know, that's an investment in the 29 pick right there, if I've ever seen one.
I think that's a very good point. And just taking a step back as a Nets fan right now, I think we just need to be emotionally prepared that the Suns may win the next two championships and may make additional win now moves that may make some of our blood boil, but long-term that's probably wonderful for the assets that we got back for them. And the Kevin Durant era is over. The Nets are a contender and we need to try to move on from that. And I'm saying that because, you know, it's very hard. I'm still angry about how the whole thing went down. And I think it's ridiculous and how he gave us only one team that he wanted to be traded to and didn't want a bidding war. Just insane demands to make for somebody that completely blew up the franchise.
But he did pick a team with a crazy owner. So yes. It didn't work out so terribly.
Yeah, the timing with Matt Ishbia worked out very, very well in our favor with zero protections on those picks. That is awesome. So we don't have to worry at all about where they land. And that makes them incredibly valuable trade assets like we were talking about earlier. But we just, you know, we have to be okay with the Suns winning short term. And I think we almost have to be rooting for it because it continues to raise the value of the Nets assets in the eyes of the rest of the league. And there may be more teams looking to potentially blow it up now because of the Suns' rise to prominence.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? The picks aren't worth less if they do better in the near term. And the Nets have nothing next year. So there's really no impact on this season. Unless you want to talk bank shot stuff, like if they win the title, like, are they less motivated to come back and lackadaisical in 2025 where, you know, maybe that pick, even though that'll still be a really good team, sinks into the 20s, 2026, you don't have any Suns picks. And then by 2027, like, you know, maybe the clock has struck midnight. We'll see. Right. But you know, by then, who knows, maybe the Nets have cashed that pick in for Pascal Siakam or somebody else anyway.
Like we talked about last time, Damon Siakam, I think, is my ideal offseason. All the stars, moons, and quasars align. If we trade all of our assets and we end up with those two players, that would be incredible. And I'd have a ton of fun watching that team. Two high character guys that at least try on both ends of the floor, even though Dame gets lit up. I just think that would be the anti Kyrie and Durant team. So I did want to talk briefly about, well, actually two things. One, I do see the Nets, those rumors about the Nets aggressively trying to move up. I know this is the time of year where there are a lot of smoke screens given to reporters and agents, but I do think that there's credence behind that, if only because the Nets don't have a single draft pick. And because of that, they might be trying to maximize, okay, cool, yeah, we can take some high upside swings at 21 and 22, but maybe we'll get more of a sure high upside swing if we can move up even five spots for one of our wings and a pick. So I could see that, and I think that's why that could make the Nets a little bit more urgent and desperate about moving up when they normally would not be of that mind. One other thing that I wanted to touch on is if we do keep the picks, what the type of player that we take might say about how the Nets view their prospects of either standing pat, blowing it up, or bringing in a star. So, for example, I'll throw one out there, and I think we can have a conversation about it. If the Nets take, let's say, Chris Murray and Jaime Jaquez drop to them, that tells me those are both older players. Those are both high floor, low ceiling guys that we're expecting to have somebody come in that's going to help raise the ceiling of our team. And we need to be sure that we have players in place that are going to be able to contribute on very, very cheap contracts in conjunction with that player. Whereas on the flip side, if we're taking more higher upswing guys, which we can talk through, you know, unless the thought process is we're going to have a pretty deep roster, we're going to be in contention, we can stick these guys in the G League and develop them, which I think is tough with injuries and the fact that teams get very expensive, the new CBA, that tells me that we're not necessarily as sure that we're getting a star and we might be building for the long term. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I generally agree. I think where I differ a little bit is, to me, this is a pivot toward a player development model. And I don't necessarily know, you know, I think what I always felt like the Nets were successful with under Sean Marks and Kenny Atkinson was they knew what they wanted to be, yeah. Even if they didn't have the talent to be that yet. They ran the system that they ran. They had clear roles identified for guys. When they brought veterans in, they had clear roles identified for them, both on the court and in the locker room. And I think, you know, you watch somebody's development like Jared Allen's, for instance, and the way that they really narrowed the focus of what they were asking him to focus on at a given time, you know, giving him the freedom to do things like shoot corner threes and try to develop that area of his game, even though that didn't work out. But then, like, you know, just sort of going through his progressions of like just play defense and catch lobs to, okay, we're going to give you the, you know, the ball on the short roll and we're going to ask you to, you know, hit some reads, but we're going to put you in like pretty basic situations to kind of, you know, keep the training wheels on. And so I feel like, you know, you think of it in terms of overall assets. I don't think everything has to be I think you could, I mean, to use like Omax as an example, right? Like, I think you could pull him in. He's the type of guy that I think in your scenario would indicate like, okay, we've got a star coming. I think you could pull him in knowing that you might have a star coming and he could be a cheap way to replicate what you're getting from Royce O'Neal or Dorian Finney-Smith. He could also be a way to be able to move one of Royce O'Neal or Dorian Finney-Smith for assets. Mm-hmm. And then he could also be the kind of player that, you know, you grow into a role where, you know, he could be a guy that's there when you get a star. He could be a guy that you deal to get a star as well. So, you know, I don't necessarily know that I would read too much into it. I think you're generally right and it could tip the hand, but I think there's a lot of scenarios where it's just sort of taking the guy that they believe in and taking the guy that's the best guy available, figuring that, you know, it enhances the overall asset package and the overall sort of balance sheet of the team. We want to put our guys in a position to succeed and we want to get the most sort of value out of each of them and sort of what that means in terms of where it plots us against like winning a championship, like I think is maybe something to be seen. You know, is this a guy that we see being like on the floor when we win the title? Is this a guy that we see being a trade chip that gets us something else that allows us to be on the floor when we win a title? I don't know.
Yeah, that's fair. It might be overthinking it too. At some point in the draft, you just have to take what the defense gives you, and it's really just whoever's available and who's highest on our board is who we're probably going to take. Did you have any players in mind that the Nets might be targeting if they do try to move up? Or were you just thinking that they're definitely going to try to move up?
I think the names that sort of came to mind were, you know, more sort of point guard types. So if you can get high enough up, you know, getting like an Anthony Black, Kobe Bufkin is maybe more of a combo guard, but somebody that I think, you know, is kind of shooting up the draft boards and potentially out of their range. And Cason Wallace is another guy that I've seen kind of mocked to them. But like those guys, I mean, just like looking at the Athletic mock draft here, I mean, they've got Bufkin going at 12. They've got Cason Wallace going at 13, Grady Dick at 14, and Chris Murray going at 15. So like, I think in that sort of range, you know, I think it's very possible that you'd be able to get somebody that could come in and contribute. They've got Anthony Black going at 8, so they're probably not getting that high unless they swing something with Indiana. And I don't know if that's in the cards anyway. But somebody like that, I mean, that to me is the glaring need on this roster. So if you are going to bring somebody in, and that's the way you sort of maximize the fact that the roster is built around them too, right? Like if you know, I mean, I can't imagine a better landing spot for somebody like an Anthony Black than to come in and play for this team with the defense that's around him, and you'd be able to capitalize on the fact that he's big for his position and is a good defender, and you'd put enough sort of floor spacing on the floor with him as well to make it work.
For what it's worth, I completely agree with you. I think if we do move up, the one thing this team is missing is a high-level creator. So I think we would have to be absolutely certain that we were moving up with the chance to nab somebody that could be a primary or secondary creator on a really good team. So whether that's somebody like Asar Thompson or Anthony Black, which I think you're right. I think those are probably a little bit too high for us to fly, or it would take a lot of assets and you'd be in one of those deals where you were trading 2 to 4 picks plus an asset to potentially move up there, which I think would be nuts. But if you can grab somebody like a Bufkin or a Cason Wallace in the 10 to 15 range, maybe even a Jalen Hutchifino, that could be worth it. And that's probably what we're looking at. That seems like a more realistic range to move into.
Yeah, the one team that I kind of kept coming back to when we were doing this is like Orlando has 2 lottery picks. They have number 6 and number 11. They've got a lot of young talent. They don't necessarily benefit from throwing more, you know, younger bodies at things. They definitely have a need for movement shooting, which, you know, you could address by picking Grady Dick or Jordan Hawkins, but you could also address by getting Joe Harris is expiring and potentially having him as a trade chip down the road. You know, is there a play where you could, I mean, you know, 21, 22 Joe Harris for 11 and, you know, maybe a future second or something like that. Like that could be a way to go. And, you know, maybe not a deal that you need to make until, you know, closer in when you have more confidence in who you're getting. But I don't know that like of all the teams, right. Cause I think the challenge is if you're going to use like a Royce O'Neal or a Dorian Finney-Smith to try to move up, you need a team that's like relatively ready to contend. And there really just aren't that many that fit the bill. I mean, it sounded like Indiana was sort of shopping for a wing, but it's just hard to get them, you know, to move off 7 just seems a little bit insane. But moving off 11 when you already have 6 and you'd be getting some quality players back, like, I don't know, maybe there's some potential there.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I mean, I would do that in a heartbeat. I know I said that I wasn't a fan of trading multiple picks, but if we're giving up the Joe Harris contract and we're moving up to 11, there's some really high-level creators in that range.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you could, like, soften the blow. I mean, I'm just trying to look at what they have in the second round real quick because, like that's the other thing is, like, if you can get, like, a decent early – second rounder, like, you know, I feel like that's another area where Sean Marks could you know, you could take a flyer on, you know, filling some of your other roles or filling out your team that way. Yeah, 36.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, 21, 22 and Joe Harris for 11, 36 and that's it. I mean, and if you can get Cole Anthony back in the deal too, like mazel tov, baby.
Right. Mazel tov. Take another flyer on a underrated, might be up for a second contract, which you could probably pay him not that much money for that second contract.
Yeah. And I say this as a Joe Harris jersey owner and some, you know, like I'm, you know, the real end of an era there, but something that I think would be, you know, would definitely make a ton of sense for the Mets.
Yeah. Cole Anthony could be our, D-Lo at home.
Exactly.
Oh. All right. What else do we want to talk about? Is that it or is there anything else you wanted to go through?
I think that's pretty much it, man. Like, I think it wraps it up. I mean, we'll see as things unfold over the next little bit here. You know, I think the big, I guess my other questions are just, you know, how hard are they going to get squeezed on Cam Johnson's number? I think you kind of have to re-sign him no matter the price. So it's just a question of like, what trade value does he recoup at, you know, wherever he goes. It sounds like there's definitely positive sentiment between both sides with him coming back. And then number two, like I'm intrigued as to what happens with Cam Thomas, because like we talked about, like developing him, just as somebody that stops the ball as much as he does. That's like somebody where, you know, on the one hand is like, you want to grow your young guys and you want to, you know, turn the reins over. On the other hand, like he feels like the type of player that actively like is detrimental to the development of those around him. And so I'm interested to see how that kind of works, particularly if like, if their top priorities are sort of what I laid out in terms of leveling Mikhail up and trying to recoup trade value for Ben Simmons. Like, I don't see how, having Cam Thomas pound the ball into the, you know, into the wood for fucking 40 minutes a game and scoring, you know, 50 points, like really helps.
It's brutal. I mean, if he wants to really stick in the NBA and play meaningful minutes, he's going to have to learn to play off ball, which is so far away from his skill set right now. It's tough to see it ever happening. He seems like the type of guy where if he's ever going to play for a good team, he needs to hit every single shot to stay on the floor, because he takes so much off the table on defense, and he's taking the ball out of players' hands where three of the four guys on the floor beside him could be better players than him.
Are you implying that the Fujian Sturgeons are not a good team, Brett?
I think they, and I do not think it's a bad thing to go over there and get your money. I would be doing the exact same thing. I'm like, hey, I'm on the outs in the NBA, whatever. I'll go make a couple mil in China.
And I guess my last question, if we get 36, can we use it to take Adama Sanogo or?
Yes.
Or what's the deal? Do we keep him for 51?
Please give me Adama Sanogo. If we get Adama Sanogo at 51, that's a steal, Carl. the steal of the draft.
So much interior touch and girth, that girth that we wanted. Snaz Reed at home, baby.
Dude, if we get 36, we're taking Andre Jackson. Don't kid yourself.
No, because Andre Jackson's going to go at like, you know, to the Clippers or somebody earlier.
26.
Yeah. No, I like how the Ringer's draft guide has Sanogo as thick Serge Ibaka. Just with the flattest jump shot imaginable. Needs a thicker jump shot.
It somehow goes in. I don't, he just gets the ball to go in the basket.
He's got amazing, incredible touch and just like incredible hands too. Like that was like Kevin mentioned that when we were watching the tournament run, but just like a number of times, like you see the ball thrown into the post and just like, I mean, like Hashim Thabeet, like just like waving cinder blocks around, like, God, you know, man. Sanogo caught everything. And I feel like he could even, well, he can't finish a lob from anybody because he can't jump that high, but if you gave him a 9-foot rim, he could finish a lob from Spencer Dinwiddie. So, it's, you know, pretty impressive. We'll see.
Dude, forget Hashim Thabeet. Jared Allen couldn't even catch the ball his rookie season. So
no, yeah, he hit some stone mitts as well. But yeah. Thabeet was It's really bad.
Tough, man. I can't believe you got picked second. That was wild.
All right, man. Should we wrap this up?
Yeah, dude. This is a fun one. I'm excited about the draft. I can't wait to see what happens. And if it's not an exciting day, Nets fans, fear not. I think that we're on the straight and narrow again. And with Josai taking on a bigger role as chairman of the board at Alibaba, hopefully he'll have even less time to spend with the Nets moving forward.
Yeah. And Brett, we got through an entire draft episode. We didn't make any Grady Dick jokes.
Oh, that's true. Although I did trademark projectile dysfunction if he does have a poor shooting rookie season. So
that's right. Well, I like the idea of Joe Harris coming in as the fluffer, the 3-point fluffer. You know, he is the guy that comes in when you need to get your dick up and running. So on that note, you find us on Stitcher, Breaker, SoundCloud, Spotify, iTunes. Email us russellandfro@gmail.com. We don't know the password, but you can send an email there. And Brett got back into Twitter. He called up Elon, and he got let back in. So you might mix it up with both of us on there.
Carter, when I left you for Virginia, they didn't offend you, cause you know I only stepped out to get dinner. Hello, Brooklyn.
How you doing? Where you going? Can I come soon? I can. I'm be your buddy, be my lady, and have my baby. You got my car, you got me crazy. Whatever you throw me, baby, girl, just take it. Cause I'm so taken, if you take it. I'm just saying, baby, I'm just saying.
That's our back.